And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, December 4th, 2020. Police in South Sudan say one person was killed during intercommunal clashes outside the capital, Juba.
There was clashes between cartel keepers in the western side of Juba. Well, police went there to address the situation. Unfortunately, they fired on us, and as a result, we lost one of our officers.
And health authorities in South Sudan charge travelers for COVID-19 tests.
In fact, I got no way to test anymore because I don't have that $75. Where will I get that 45,000 South Sudanese pound? When my father is paid only 1,200 South Sudanese pound, where will I get that pound?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan Police Service says one person was killed and another injured following 3 days of intercommunal clashes between two armed groups of young men in Jopa village of Luri, Payam in Central Equatoria State. The police spokesperson, Major General Daniel Justin, says hundreds of families have fled their homes. He says a police force has been deployed in the area to prevent further clashes. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Major General Daniel Justin, spokesperson for South Sudan National Police Service, says fighting had continued for days this week between two groups of armed Mundare cattle keepers. He says the government sent police to the area to stop violence between cattle keepers, but the armed youth turned their guns on the police, killing one officer at the rank of first lieutenant.
There was clashes between cattle keepers in the western side of Juba. Well, police went there to address the situation. Unfortunately, they fired on us, and as a result, we lost one of our officers. After that, they ran away. We pursued them until we managed to arrest one of them, and then we seized the cattle, around 200-something.
Justin says one of the armed youth was wounded and is receiving treatment at the Juba Teaching Hospital. Residents and police says the hundreds of villagers have fled their homes following 3 days of intercommunal clashes between groups of armed Mundare youth, which began on Tuesday and continued through Thursday. Jopa resident Hanu Manas says she and her children fled their village on Wednesday with only the clothes on their backs.
Yesterday, when the shooting started, I was alone at home with my kids. So when I saw people were running, I decided to run as well. The gunshots were so heavy, this ends to the extent I ran without taking anything, just my kids. People fled separately, but I decided to go to Muniki.
Wafa James, a resident of Gurei, which is closer to the village of Jopa, says the fighting caused panic among residents to the extent that some decided not to return to their homes.
Indeed, what had happened yesterday was not good because such incidents create fear among civilians and it makes some people lose hope. Such incidents are not supposed to happen in town. Even there are people who have left their home yesterday until today. Many people have come back to their home because they are afraid.
Major General Justin says the motive of the fighting remains unclear and stressed that the armed youth were fighting among themselves. He says police have been monitoring the situation to prevent further violence and assured residents that the police have launched an investigation into the matter and would bring all suspected criminals to justice.
So forces are on the ground. The situation became normal because it was a threat to the people who are residing the area of Jopa. So they started to run towards Juba. Generally, the situation is calm. The situation is under control and forces are on the ground.
Mana says some residents started returning to their homes today after the situation became calm. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba. Yeah.
The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, says about 20,000 Ethiopian children in the Tigray region have been forced to flee into Sudan. UNICEF country representative in Sudan says his agency is treating children who are malnourished, providing vaccinations and other health services. UNHCR is appealing to donors for $150 million for the provision of water, shelter, education, and other services to refugees, especially children. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
At his daily briefing yesterday, the spokesperson for the United Nations Secretary General, Stephane Dujarric, said the number of Ethiopian refugees arriving in Sudan is increasing every day as the conflict in the northern Tigray region rages on.
The conflict in Tigray continues to push people into Sudan in search of safety. More than 46,400 people, nearly half of them children, have now arrived in Sudan since the start of November. UNHCR and its partners are increasing the capacity of the Rakuba camp, which is already hosting more than 10,000 Ethiopian refugees.
UNICEF Sudan country representative Abdullah Fadil, who recently visited Ethiopian children in the refugee camp in Sudan's Kassel state, tells South Sudan in Focus the situation for children in the refugee camps is quite dire.
There were about 2.3, 2.4 million children in Tigray region, and these children were going to school. Tigray actually had one of the highest enrollment rates in Ethiopia. Now, all of a sudden, about 20,000 or so children are out of school as refugees in Sudan. Of course, they're also traumatized because of the war. They've left behind everything they knew. They've trekked for hours, in some cases days, and they don't know what's happening. Everything they know has been torn from them.
Fadl says his agency is working with other partners to provide nutritional, hygiene, and health services to Ethiopian refugees in Sudan, especially children.
As UNICEF, we were able to provide, set up systems for water, check children for malnutrition, make sure children were safe physically, also provide treatment for malnutrition in some cases, and also provide some health response. Actually, Sudan is undergoing polio campaign vaccination, and already over 60% of the children in the refugees camps have already been vaccinated, not only for polio, but also measles and other health-related support was provided.
Fadl says Sudan needs more help from donors to continue to support the nearly 50,000 Ethiopian refugees, as Sudan is going through a difficult political transition in an economic crisis of its own. Fadl says his agency has taken measures to accommodate the special needs of children by creating safe spaces for them.
UNICEF, along with partners, and I'm proud to say Norwegian Refugee Council was among the first to respond, set up learning spaces for children. UNICEF, of course, initially provided safe zones for children where mothers also could breastfeed, where we could check nutritional status of children, but also safe spaces for children to be able to play around.
While most Ethiopian children have arrived in Sudan with their parents, UNICEF is still collecting information on possible unaccompanied children who fled to Sudan to escape the war in Tigray.
We need international community's generosity to really respond to the needs of these refugees. Sudan already has been generous by opening its borders and allowing close to 50,000 people to come in. So it's time that we really responded with water, hygiene, sanitation, because we don't want disease outbreaks to occur.
The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, and dozens of other humanitarian partners launched an appeal last week for $147 million to provide critical services to Ethiopian refugees in Sudan over the next 6 months. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Washington, we move to Yei, where some South Sudanese living with disabilities in Central Equatoria State allege some medical workers ignore people with disabilities seeking treatment at government health facilities. The director of Yei Civil Hospital denies the accusations, saying health professionals are committed to treating patients equally regardless of their status. For VOA News, Daniel Friday Martin reports from Ye.
Ye Town resident Asunta Wasuk says most often she finds it too difficult to access medical care at Ye Civil Hospital. Asunta accuses medical workers at the facility of violating the rights of people living with disabilities.
We are not looked as human beings in the hospital, and when we seek for medical assistance, we are being pushed away. More special, disabled, pregnant mothers have been insulted because of our disability status, and this is what is paining most of us while at the hospital.
Dixon Mawa, another person with disability, says people with visual disability most often suffers at the hospital without medical attention.
As the Minister of Health is saying, health for all, but why are we discriminated? A woman with disability using a wheelchair may not have access even to go to the OPD or to see the doctor. There should be a change within the hospital system. We need somebody to be trained on sign language. Even doctors should be encouraged to welcome women with disability and treat them equal like other people.
Both Wasuk and Mawa are appealing to the health ministry and health administrators to ensure that the rights of people with disabilities are respected. Addis Victor, chairperson of Disabled Action Group in Ye River County, is calling on health and medical workers to treat people equally regardless of their status.
Our voice is that we need a focal person in every department in the hospital so that they are attended to as soon as possible. So we are urging service providers, especially the hospital, to look at the equality and the rights of persons with disability regardless of his status, so that they can equally get the services as a right equally with other people.
Dr. Joseph Malis, the medical director for Ye Civil Hospital, denies allegations that medical workers discriminate against people with disabilities.
Not only people with disability, but everyone, we see them as the same one. This is a fundamental right for everyone to get health services. So there is a realm whereby if there is someone with disability, we'll be able to access the OPD, we'll be able to access our offices. We keep equipping our people on how to communicate, not only to people with disability, but for everyone as a human being accessing services in this facility. They have a right to be treated in a very good way.
Joseph says discriminating against certain persons with disabilities will violate the medical code of ethics. Amule Felix, administrator for the now defunct Ye River State, says the government is working hard to ensure that the rights of people with disabilities are respected. Amule strongly advises all health workers, institutions, and the general public not to discriminate against persons with disabilities.
Number one is the use of language.
The first thing is the use of language that creates hate, abuse, and discrimination against people with disability. And today, I call on all of us to stand up and provide services to the people living with disabilities in our communities.
Amule says it is time to respond to people with disabilities with action, not words. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Ye.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese health authorities charge travelers who are seeking COVID tests. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who comes first in your life?
My sister comes first, because she was the one who raised me. She taught me how to do everything, so she comes first.
Definitely God, but I think when talking about people, I think my family and my friends, just people who I've, you know, surrounded myself with.
I think the woman that I love, every moment I think about her, every moment I wish I'm around her, because she makes me happy. She gives me a lot of peace. She has a way of helping me to just relax and calm down.
My mom comes first in my life because she has really done a whole lot for me, and if there's anything, I would really want to do something to honor her.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu.
The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. South Sudan's National Minister of Health is now charging people who want COVID-free certificates for travels out of the country. South Sudanese nationals will pay $75 while foreigners will pay $115. The move sparked angry reaction from some South Sudanese who are asking the Ministry of Health to stop charging fees for COVID tests. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
John Deng, a student who wants to travel to Juba in order to sit for his final examinations at Bogambe University in Uganda. Deng was grumbling as he and three colleagues walked out of the Dr. John Garang Infectious Disease Unit, where, in the past, the health ministry conducted tests for coronavirus free of charge. Deng says he was surprised when a health official told him he had to pay $75 in order to get tested.
In fact, I got no way to test anymore because I don't have that $75. Where will I get that 45,000 South Sudanese pound when my father is paid only 1,200 South Sudanese pound? Where will I get that pound?
Deng says he has no hope of raising $75 and will likely miss his exams. 22-year-old Rina Dongo, another South Sudanese student in Juba, says she too needs to travel to Uganda to write her end of second-year examinations. Dongo says she was not aware of the new coronavirus testing fee. Dongo tells South Sudan in Focus she is stranded in Juba.
I'm a student. I don't have that money. I cannot go to Uganda now. I don't know what I'll do about the exams. We are starting on Monday.
Dongo is calling on the government to make the testing affordable to South Sudanese nationals.
At least foreigners should be the one to pay. Like we now, the citizens. Now, if we are giving out such huge amount of money, for us, the orphans, where can we get really that money?
At the gate of the new government testing center, a few meters east of the old one, stands Joseph Lermeta Kalesinga, a foreigner. Kalesinga showed South Sudan in Focus a payment receipt bearing a logo with the name Met Blue. Kalesinga says he registered yesterday with the understanding that he would be tested free of charge today. When he showed up to get tested, that's when a health worker informed about the new fee. Kalesinga says the testing fee is too high given the economic crisis people are facing in South Sudan.
At least the government should think of lowering this thing, because actually those people are going outside that they're not going for pleasure but to see their families and arrange for tomorrow.
Others are going back home.
And to arrange for next year, learning issues. And maybe some are going to bring back their families here. So actually it is costly, something that should be reconsidered.
Health Ministry spokesperson Dr. Thao Loi confirmed the government authorized a private laboratory known as MetBlue to conduct the tests on people seeking to travel outside the country for a fee.
The public health laboratory will continue to test only the alert cases, the contact, people who are suspected to be patients. But for people who are traveling, their own private traveling, the requirement is that they test for COVID-19, and that will be done by a private company. It's no longer now a work of the Ministry of Health. Only our public health laboratory will be doing the supervision to ensure that these people are doing the correct thing.
Dr. Richard Linolako, head of the COVID-19 incident management within the health ministry, says there are no other private clinics operating in Juba charging for coronavirus tests aside from MetBlue, which he says has been accredited by the government.
MetBlue Lab, the only one that accredited, approved, and we know they have done presentation and it's been evaluated with the public health laboratory, and they are given only that lab at the moment that is the test for travel.
Dr. Lewis says the government had planned to privatize COVID-19 testing and the public was informed about the decision. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon reporting from Juba.
As the United States struggles to contain the coronavirus with more than 14 million confirmed cases, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warned Thursday that up to 19,500 people could die during the week of December 25. Reuters' Lisa Barnett has this report.
U.S. deaths from the coronavirus reached their second highest level ever on Wednesday, with 2,811 lives lost, according to a Reuters tally of official data, one short of the record from April 15th. That marks 2 days in a row that the death toll has passed 2,000. A record number of people were hospitalized on Wednesday, nearly 100,000, and there were nearly 200,000 new cases reported. The sobering data came on the heels of a warning from Robert Redfield, the head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that the worst is yet to come.
December and January and February are going to be rough times. I actually believe they're going to be the most difficult time in the public health history of this nation.
Underscoring the crisis, the CDC on Thursday reported that up to 19,500 deaths could occur during the Christmas week alone. Besides the monumental loss of life, Redfield said the country faces the prospect of a healthcare system strained to the point of collapse. The contagion has now reached every corner of the country, with 90% of all U.S. hospitals in areas designated as coronavirus hot zones, and with the virus spreading on a much steeper trajectory than any previous wave of the pandemic. President-elect Joe Biden on Wednesday amplified the bleak forecast during a roundtable with workers and small business owners hit hard by the devastating economic fallout.
We're likely to lose another 250,000 people dead between now and January. You hear me? Because people aren't paying attention.
Redfield projected the total number of deaths could be close to 450,000 before February, adding that the U.S. could start losing around 3,000 people a day, roughly the same number that died in the September 11th attacks, and that that rate could continue over the next 2 months.
Still on COVID, the UN Conference on Trade and Development reports that the COVID-19 pandemic had had a devastating impact on most of the world's 47 least developed countries, whose economies have slumped into the lowest level in 30 years. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
In this year's Least Developed Countries report, UNCTAD economists warn the current grim situation will not improve unless the world's poorest countries drastically boost their productive capacities. They report average income is likely to fail in at least 43 of the 47 LDCs, pushing 32 million people into extreme poverty. Director of UNCTAD's Division for Africa and LDCs, Paul Akiwumi, says LDCs need to focus on their productive capacity to diversify their economies so they can deal with the challenges of climate change, recession, and now COVID. He says LDCs must build up their productive human, natural, and capital resources and entrepreneurship to provide goods and services. This, he says, will enable them to grow and develop their economies.
Now, it is quite clear that LDCs, being commodity-driven, need to move forward in their development paradigm. And we've seen through the COVID crisis that because they're commodity-driven, they've been able, and all the lockdown that has happened, they've been able to export less, and their revenues are down, the tax collection is down, and their economies have suffered considerably.
Akiwumi cites lagging international support as another problem. Because funding is down, he says LDCs have little money for social development and are unable to service their foreign debt. The report finds 8 LDCs, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Ethiopia, Laos, Myanmar, Nepal, and Rwanda, have modernized and transformed their productive capacities into better performing economic structures. It says Asian LDCs have increased their manufacturing capacity, which now accounts for 19% of their gross domestic product and 12% employment. The same cannot be said for African LDCs and Haiti. The report says manufacturing in those countries remains stagnant and accounts for only 9% GDP and just 5% employment. UNCTAD is calling on the international community to invest, finance, and support LDCs in their efforts to transform and rebuild their economies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Moudou. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you in a dancing mood with the song Danse Yaba Kongole by Koffi Olomide. Listening to Koffi Olomide with the song Danse Yaba Kongole. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.